Welcome to Between Two Chairs, Demystifying Commercial Real Estate, the podcast that brings you the latest insights and trends on the South Florida commercial real estate market with your hosts, Fernando Arencibia Jr. and Jennifer Wollman. In each episode, we dive into the world of commercial real estate and break down complex concepts to make them accessible for everyone. Whether you're a real estate professional, a curious investor, or just interested in the South Florida market in general, Between Two Chairs is the podcast for you. So pull up a chair and join us.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Between Two Chairs. My name is Fernando Arencibia. Thank you for joining us. And with me, as always, is the ever studious Jennifer Wollman. Jennifer, say hi.
Hello, everybody.
So, Jennifer, we have been doing these smaller, bite-sized podcast episodes where we dive into a very specific aspect of, for example, a commercial lease or any kind of transaction, whether it's for purchase or lease. And we really enjoy the idea that sometimes when you go very granular, you know, you go very in-depth into something that is, hyper-specific within a contract, you sometimes learn more about the entire process just by diving in a little deeper, right? And today we thought that we would have a conversation about something that oftentimes can create a lot of obstacles and, you know, what we call hair on a deal, which is the right of first refusal in a commercial lease.
Correct. And a right of first refusal can be in a lease, and it could be for either a sale, so the tenant purchasing the space, or it could be for additional space within a building, right? So it could be for, so the right of first refusal can be for more space to expand, or it can be to purchase the space that they're in. So in a lease, a tenant who has a lot of money invested in a space and who's been in a space for a long time, when they're negotiating lease, will usually want the right of first refusal. And basically, the right of first refusal says, if somebody comes and offers to lease additional space, so the landlord or owner puts the property up for lease or sale, somebody comes in and says, I want to lease that space, or I want to buy that space, the tenant then has to be presented with the new person's, the third party's, lease details or offer details, and they can match that. If they match whatever is being offered by the third party, then the landlord accepts the tenant's offer to purchase or the tenant's offer to expand into the additional space.
Yeah. I think what we should focus on is more on the right of first refusal for purchase.
Correct. That's what we are going to focus on. It's just to let you know it's both.
You know, yeah. And usually there are some key issues with this, you know, all around. And I think it's important to break down. The first thing it does is that it creates a certain level of uncertainty for the landlord, right? Because in terms of when the landlord is making a decision to sell the property, any third party offer that comes in can be disrupted when the tenant decides to exercise the right of purchase. I think it also creates uncertainty or an incredible sense of urgency on the side of the tenant, because if you get an unsolicited offer on a property and all of a sudden the tenant has a right of first refusal, the tenant is presented with, here's the offer, here are the terms of the offer, and now you have to match that. The tenant wasn't necessarily getting ready to do that, right? Now they have to, you know, secure lending. If there was lending involving the original offer, they have to, you know, there are so many factors that are involved in the right of first refusal. But really, it just creates a level of uncertainty on the landlord. And I've heard landlords sometimes say this, where they will throw it in as a courtesy. You know, it's like a courtesy to the tenant that, hey, when I'm ready to sell, I'll give you the right to do so. But this create so many issues down the line when the landlord is ready to sell the property.
Right, and a lot of landlords that I work with won't do it because it ties them up. And it actually impedes a future sale. So if you have a tenant in a space and they have a long-term lease with options to renew, they have something that you can sell. That's something of value, right? You can sell that to an investor based on the lease terms and everything else. If you have a right of first refusal in there, to your point, a lot of people, when they say, is there a right of first refusal? If there is, I'm not going to be the person that you use to flush out, you know, the other party to make them buy. If it's a tenant, it does protect the tenant because, let's say, again, that 10-year lease, they've got a lot of improvements. Or let's say they're on their 15th year of a 10-year lease because they had an option. Mm-hmm. They already have clientele going there. They love their space. Now, if they buy it, they might be in a position that they didn't foresee themselves being in, but it's giving them control over their destiny going forward.
Right.
Because if somebody else buys it, they might say, okay, they have an additional 5-year option, but if they don't give me notice on time or if it's at market rent and I don't agree or whatever the term in the lease is, the new owner might say, I'm not going to, you know, they're not going to be able to do their extension, right? So it gives, I can understand why tenants want it, because it's like, if it does get sold, I'm not going to lose my business. I'm not going to lose what I've already built up. But from a landlord perspective, it limits it. So one of the other items, instead of a right of first refusal, is something called the right of first offer. And they sound the same and they're similar, but they're not the same, because a right of first offer basically says, if you're going to sell it, you offer it to me first. And I can say yes or no, and I can set the terms as the tenant, right? Whereas in the other one, I have to match. I'm letting somebody else do the work and I have to match. So in that case, the landlord's like, I like it because it's still, to your point earlier, it still provides some ease and I'm appeasing the tenant, but it doesn't limit me as much.
Right.
But it still limits you, because if they have a right of first offer and the tenant says no, you can still have a third party come in, make an offer, because now I go and I list it for sale. But depending on how that right of first offer is written in a lease, and again, I'm not an attorney, and that's why these terms, when we do the deep dive, are so important to take to an attorney and as a landlord or as a tenant, explaining to that attorney what your intent is or what your concern is, so it can be described and written in the lease to appease that, is I give you the right of first offer, you say no, I take it out, right, to market, I get a buyer. Depending on how the lease is written, it says that you can't sell it to somebody else until I say no. In that case, I would want, if I represent the landlord, I would want it to say, as the landlord, I'm giving you the right of first offer. If you say no to the right of first offer in writing, if I present it to you first, you waive that right, so that now when I put it to market, it's basically a right of first refusal without having to have somebody else present first.
Yeah.
Right. So that's kind of the little nuance between right of first refusal and right of first offer.
So let's work through that just a little bit more. In a right of first offer, I am the landlord and I've decided I'm going to sell the property. I'm going to go to the tenant and say, I'm going to put the property up on the market. I am giving you notice to execute on your right of first offer. If you want to make the first offer, right, on the property, I will consider it. There is no requirement at that point for the seller to accept that offer.
Correct.
Right? It's just that the tenant is basically saying, I'm willing to buy it. This is the amount
that I'm willing
to buy it for. I could still list the property. But what happens if the landlord is not thinking of selling? There is a right of first offer on the table in the lease, but now they get an unsolicited offer for their building. What happens then?
depending on how the lease is written in the description, it says that a seller cannot sell to a third party
right.
without giving the right to yeah. the buyer. So in that situation, it appears to me, and again, that's why yeah. wording an attorney's writing it is so yeah. important, because in that situation, to me, it would almost be more like a right of first refusal, right? Right. In that situation, yeah. it would revert back. So yeah. if your intent as a landlord is to say, look, I'm going to give you the right of first offer if I decide to sell. But if I don't decide to sell and I get a third party offer, then that's off yeah. the table.
Correct.
Right? So I think that's where, and again, everything's up for negotiation, because as a tenant, you're not going to want that off the table ever. Right. Because like, yeah. okay, so my landlord, I love my landlord. We get along right. great. I love where I'm doing business. I've got this great lease with all of these options to renew. But wait a minute. Now some unknown person comes and makes an offer and I don't even have to know about it.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's where the wording comes in and yeah. is tricky, because the other one, not to throw. So these two. Both the right of first refusal and a right of first offer are basically options to buy.
Right.
But unlike a regular option where you do a lease with an option to buy, there's no monetary consideration Correct. On the part of the tenant.
Correct.
And it's not time specific.
Right.
So,
exactly.
again, maybe if you speak to an attorney, you can make it more like an option without the monetary by saying, okay, if I sell within X number of years, then the ROFO comes into play. And if not, there's none, or something to that effect, right. you know. But again, yeah. that goes into the negotiation process and why you may want one
versus
or the other, right?
No, and I think you're right, though, because it's introducing another term, and we're trying to demystify
right.
real estate. But, you know, it's this idea of an option to buy. And what I will mention just for people to understand is that, you know, again, we're not attorneys and we're not playing one on the podcast, on the airwaves.
Yes.
But one thing, you know, that I've always been told is that the option to buy on a lease with an option to buy requires you to have a monetary consideration above and beyond the market value of that lease, right? And there are some option to buys in which there is a certain amount that the tenant is paying, above the market value of the property. And sometimes if they do execute on the option to buy, they will get a credit based on that overage, right? But without that consideration, even though it is written on the lease, they have the option to buy, it may not be legally binding in the same way than doing it the right way, which means that you have to pay above market rent, and that, you know, all of that has to be very well laid out on the lease. I have read so many right of first refusals, and I want to go over a couple of examples, but they are almost always extremely poorly written,
mm-hmm.
almost like, you know, a last minute throw it in there in the lease, and, you know, it creates so many issues. Now, one of the key issues that we mentioned at the beginning of this episode is the uncertainty for the landlord. The other one is it creates potentially a lot of delays in transactions, right? Because, you know, the landlord gets an offer. They're going to execute on the right of first refusal. Usually, if it is written correctly, there is a set timeline under which the contract is presented to the tenant. The tenant has X number of days to decide if they want to execute. And now you actually have to execute. But for whatever reason, let's say that the tenant does take the right of first refusal and they accept all the terms. And now they cannot execute on closing the deal.
Or they're doing the due diligence and decide to back out after the due
exactly.
diligence period.
Now that buyer that you had that was ready, willing, and able, mm-hmm. either has moved on to another property, has turned cold. Those delays, it can be extremely difficult. And even though we're focusing on the sale, to your point, if I'm a tenant and I have a right of first refusal for the space next to mine, and now I have a tenant that is coming to the landlord, I want to rent it. And the tenant says, I'm going to match that offer. I want to take the space. And for whatever reason, there are delays. Maybe the build out that it's going to be required is going to, the terms are not necessarily going to 100% match. And that, again, that delay, time is money. And, you know, you might lose out on a great tenant or on a great purchaser of the property. The terms of the offer, right? The terms of the offer becomes a very negotiable aspect of it. And I wanna just throw in this little thing because I have seen it happen. Oftentimes, when you sell, this is what's exciting about commercial real estate, right? There's nothing that is ever the same, right? And sometimes the owner of a property, you know, they might own multiple units. You know, they might own this warehouse here. They might own this other property. So now you might have a seller that says, I'm going to sell my portfolio properties. Now I have five properties. And in one of these properties, I have a right of first refusal, right? Look at how complicated potentially this becomes. Now this person gets an offer for the entire portfolio. But this right of first refusal is only for this one property. Now, he could say, I'm going to have to either carve out this property, right? But they might also say, well, look, the terms of the offer are all four, right? And the tenant is, wait a minute. I had a right of first refusal just for this building, right? And now it becomes a legal fight over what does it mean to match the terms of the offer. I'll throw another thing here, which is that sometimes if you're selling, let's say I'm selling this portfolio to an entity that is going to pay me beyond monetary, you know, cash on the closing, they are going to pay me by having an ownership interest in another entity or stock options, which the tenant cannot match, right? And so again, the details of that are written into the right of first refusal, knowing full well, guys, we have read so many of these leases. Yeah. They are usually terribly written, right? Create so much complexity and it becomes a legal wrangling. Do you?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think the ones that are terribly written are written probably by the owners themselves, right, or, you know, somebody who doesn't really understand the owner's intent, or the owner might not even understand what it means, right? If I've owned this property for forever and I've never run into it and I've always had a right of first refusal, I've never really considered what that means to me on my exit.
Right.
So, we've read a lot and that we were like.
Can I share a couple of anecdotes? A couple of
No. Why do you always want to do that?
Well, guys, the episode is over. Thank you for joining
us. We love your
stories. For another episode.
That's what makes it applicable.
No, let me tell you a couple. One is I was selling a 9,000 square foot warehouse. It is a condo warehouse in a warehouse development that had probably about 75,000 square feet in total. So this is a 9,000 square foot, you know, a two multiple bay warehouse that was all united and we're selling. The seller was not aware that the condo docs had a right of first refusal. And this is the way the right of first refusal worked. Basically, the right of first refusal clause in the bylaws of the condo warehouse stipulated that if an owner wanted to sell their unit, they had to, once they received an offer for their unit, they had to inform both unit owners that were adjacent to that unit about the right of first refusal. Now, think about how crazy this is, right? And understand that even in the bylaws, you know, there were some clear stipulations as to how you were supposed to inform the owner of the other units that were adjacent to your unit, and also how much time it would be required. And I remember to this day, it had to be by a certified letter. It had to be delivered, you know, as soon as you received the offer, right? And then the tenant, the owners of those adjacent units had 10 days to come back and say that they wanted to buy the unit. There was nothing in the language about what if both of them want to buy the unit, which is just.
And there was nothing. So this was the association saying that they had to notify sellers, not other owners, not that the association itself had the right of first refusal. Because I've seen that as well, which is so weird. Okay.
Correct. correct, which is more common for the association to have the right of first refusal, right? But very uncommon to say that I own unit B, now I have to inform unit A owner and B and C owner that I have an offer and they have the right to match it. And so, and then the 10 days are coming and going. Some of these tenants were, they lived outside of the state. Obviously, we did get the certified letter ticket. No, we knew it was delivered. And I remember that, you know, once that delayed so much, because once the due diligence, once those 10 days were over, then the buyer didn't want to start their due diligence until the right of first refusal was first overcome.
Right.
Right. And then I remember one of the owners of the space called on the 11th day, 10 days are over. He says, I want to buy it. I said, well, we have a predicament here because the 10 days have gone, number one. Number two, you have to match the offer exactly in those terms. Because he was saying, well, I'm going to go to the bank and get financing. I said, well, but wait.
This is a cash deal.
This is a cash deal. They're going to close in 30 days. They have a 15-day due diligence. You got to match the offer exactly as what it is. And it's always crazy because I know for a fact that both of those owners knew that the property was for sale because I made sure that first and foremost, everybody there knew.
And that's the problem with the right of first refusal is that it doesn't compel people who want to buy the property anyway to make a move until somebody comes in and does it for them, right? And to me, that's the big issue with the right of first refusal.
Absolutely. The other issue I had, and this is where this was the most frustrating one. You have a 34,000 square foot warehouse. This is in the Miami River. There were the bulk of the space was about 27,000 square feet of warehouse. And then there were these two or three smaller office units that had really nice frontage. It almost looked like retail kind. And there were two tenants in that space. So now you have one tenant that have been there a long time. He is occupying the office. The company was occupying the office, 1,500 square feet on a 34,000 square foot space with a right of first refusal. And I can read you the language because I have it etched in my memory. Tenant shall have the right of first refusal, period, end of sentence. That was the clause in the commercial lease. There was no explanation as to how the tenant was supposed to be noticed, how long the tenant had to execute on the right of first refusal. None of that happened. Of course, once again, the tenant knew the property was on the market. Property had been on the market for 5 months. We finally got an offer, right? And the right of first refusal becomes a big issue.
How did you remember such a long clause? I'm so impressed.
Well, I remember it because I'll tell you, the day of closing, the tenant had hired an attorney to record the lease into the public records, right? And basically, they basically created a title defect to stop the sale. Now, the attorney for the seller was able to say, you signed this lease. The lease has a clause that you would not divulge the information that is in the lease. And by recording it, you hereby did it. So I'm sending you a cease and desist. You better remove it. They removed it. And now it became a negotiation. So now this tenant was able to negotiate a monetary value, right? They were basically being an obstruction to the sale. They only occupy 1,500 square feet of a huge, you know, space, basically less than 4.5% of the space they were leasing. And, you know, it's just wild and crazy that, again, it was a throw-in clause, just like, I want to write a first refusal. Oh, don't worry, we'll do it. It became a huge issue, right, which cost money to resolve in order for us to close. And it delayed the closing by about 55 days.
So to me, this, regardless of whether you're a tenant rep, a landlord rep, an investor, an owner, a user, et cetera, it's so important to read every single part of your lease. every single part. And if you don't understand it, like if you read right of first refusal and that's a clause in your lease, and the whole clause is explained with the just repeating the title of the clause, that is a huge red flag. Because you should always ask, what does this mean? What does right of first refusal mean? And under what terms and what circumstances? And so anything that you do, the same thing when we were doing an episode later on TI, and I'm sure that's going to be, you know, similar. So anything in your lease, if you don't understand it, or if there's a title, unless it says NA, not applicable under the title, or this page is intentionally left blank, if there isn't significant detail as to what that title is, you should be questioning that.
That's right. Yeah, and I think that what happens is people, perhaps because they don't consider, I'm going to sell the property, or, you know, I don't have any plans for this and that. Look, I think that it behooves property owners of, you know, really commercial property, but just property owners in general, to always make sure that they have the plethora of options that are available to them to make those decisions. You don't want to be handcuffed, right? In perpetuity sometimes, right? Because listen, I've seen some doozies, you know, when it comes to these things. And one of the things that they fail to recognize is that on paper, it sounds like, all right, I have a tenant in place. They're good tenants, you know, or I'm expecting that things are going to work out. So they work out. Hey, I want to sell the property. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to generate an offer. And I'm going to tell you, hey, I got an offer. Do you want to match it? And, you know, you think like, oh, no, I don't want to match it. It's OK. Thank you. You're thinking I'm just going to go back to my guy and just get the deal closed. But one thing that they don't recognize is that it's really hard to maximize your negotiation powers when you have a right of first refusal to contend with. Right. Because the buyer, especially when an unsolicited offer comes in, you know, where the buyer might be willing to give you everything you want, the property's not on the market, you know, but now there are buyers that are going to be very concerned about, hey, if I put this offer and if I put it too low, if I put it too high, then, you know, it might be an issue. If I put it too low, you know, that starts to get into the mindset. Buyers, usually when you're negotiating, if they know that, okay, once we sign this, I have control. Right, then we can negotiate it and we can go round and round, but because the buyer knows, okay, once I sign this, I'm going to accept this last change that you made, because I know once I signed it, the deal is mine, right? And the property is mine. When you have that right of first refusal, you have to contend with that extra aspect, which the buyer no longer has any control of.
Not only that, think about it. If you're getting a third party unsolicited offer for an off-market property, the person making that offer has already done a significant amount of due diligence.
Yeah.
They've already figured out what they're willing to pay for the property. They're figuring out that their use or whatever intended plan they have to do. It's not to say that they're not going to have a due diligence period, but they're not out there making random offers to just anybody. Your property meets a certain criteria that they're looking for, and based on the criteria that they're looking for and the characteristics and location of your property, they're willing to at least jump in with offer X.
Exactly.
Now, that offer is still negotiable between you and them, but they've already done a certain amount of work to determine what their initial offer is going to be, because they know more or less where they want to land based on their own acquisition criteria, right?
Exactly.
You throw in a right of first refusal or a right of first offer, even though they're not going to know about it, they're not going to know that you have it. That might be the highest and best you ever get out of them, even though because they're going to charge you for the hassle and inexperience and the hassle and the experience of having to wait and potentially losing a deal. And besides, now they had an off-market deal. The right of first refusal or right of first offer basically says, now I have a competitor, so it's a little bit more like an on-market deal, although it's not open to everybody. And if that person says no,
right,
what does it mean? And if that person says yes, and goes through with it, okay, I've lost a deal. Yeah. You can tell I'm not a huge fan. I understand why they're in there. I totally get it. Yeah. From a tenant. As a tenant, I would want that. If I'm putting in my blood, sweat, yeah, equity into building my business, I totally get it.
I get it too.
Because I would want it, and I fight for it for certain of right. my tenants, right?
But I get it too, but what you're really saying, and I don't think this works for anybody, honestly, mm-hmm. is that you're creating legal ambiguity.
Correct. You know?
Because, for example, if I receive an offer, I'm the landlord, I'm the owner of the building, I get an offer, I give it, I go through the process of sharing with the tenant says, no, I don't want to match that offer. Okay, but now that deal falls through, and now I'm getting another offer. Do I have to go through the same process again? Well, if it's not clearly laid out there.
Right.
You know, that might be the case
right.
for every ad nauseum, right? And so what you want to do is, if this is a sticking point, is make sure that you limit any legal ambiguity that is created by having a poorly written right of first refusal. You know, because, you know, there are tenants that are going to make a significant investment in the building, for example, but can we just agree that someone who's occupying 5% of the totals of a shopping center or a warehouse or anything like that should not have a right of first refusal to have so much control over selling the entire thing?
I'm so glad that you shared that, even though I was teasing you about it and not going to let you. I always let you tell your stories. I love your stories. But the other thing that this episode highlights is the importance of reading the condo docs. Whether you are a buyer or a tenant of a space, you need to know, because I wonder if this seller,
right,
when he bought it, had any idea that the association was going to make him. No. What if he hated his neighbors and that's why he's leaving?
I could tell you that. Yeah.
Now I have to sell to somebody I can't stand. For sure. Right?
Like, I could tell you that they didn't. And I could also tell you that the buyer was very concerned about, what do you mean in the future when I want to sell this, I gotta go through this process.
Right.
You know, and now, you know, I think that the association went through a process of reevaluating that language as a result of this experience that I went through. But yeah, I mean, that's the other part of the consideration is that sometimes it's not, you know, the buyer is also thinking, well, in the future, if I want to sell, man, I got to go through this, this stuff, you know?
And the association, you know, because the right of a first refusal for a condo association as well can also be an issue. Obviously, it's a right of first refusal to anybody, because now you have to go through the association. And usually if it's an association right of first refusal, depending on how the association is set up, it could take significantly longer, because if it's an association right of first refusal and it has to be approved by the board, some boards only meet once a quarter, so those condo docs are vital to read.
No,
I'm so happy real estate's so easy.
Yeah, exactly.
So easy.
So easy a caveman can do it.
Exactly. For you to get out my caveman. So are we going on to fun facts, or
sure.
did you have more stories you wanted
I'm good, but I do want to say to our listeners, if there is a little aspect here and there, a little term or something that you're curious about that you want us to dive in and give you a little bit of perspective, look at how much, just on one clause of the commercial lease, how many stories come out of that, how much information goes into this one clause that usually, again, is a throwaway clause that people throw out there, but it really shouldn't. It requires a lot of thinking.
It's definitely a negotiation point, right?
Right.
For me,
exactly.
That is always a negotiation
point.
It's
just like, and I'm sorry to throw this in, but it's just like there's always been clauses in commercial leases about force majeure and about, you know, acts of God and all these things. Never was that more, right? Never was there a consideration for a pandemic and how to look at that. And obviously, there has been an evolution about what that language looks like.
Okay,
now.
But wait, don't give that away now. That could be another episode.
All right, my apologies. My bad. I'm backing up.
He strays. Let me reel him in a little bit.
Yes, I do stray.
Go through, if not, we're going to go through every
stray.
Clause
Absolutely.
Of a 44-page
yes.
lease.
All right. So share the fun fact with the audience.
My fun fact for the day is, according to Vista, a Barcelona hotel group purchased the Winter Haven Hotel on South Beach for $19.5 million. It's a 71-room Art Deco hotel. Built in 1939, so that equates to 270 $177,465 per room. And the reason I threw that out there is two things that I love about it: Art Deco and Barcelona Hotel Group. So think about if you've been to the city of Barcelona and, you know, you think about its walkability, its proximity to the ocean, et cetera. It's like a perfect fit for Art Deco Miami Beach. So I love that.
Global city of the future. That's Miami, guys.
Global city now.
Well, you're right. You're right. But we're always evolving. Anyhow, guys, thank you so much.
You don't have a stat?
I do.
I'm going to call you out because this is like the fourth or fifth episode right
now. We collectively together have a stat, which you just shared with the audience. So there we go. That's the stat. I think I'm on pretty solid ground here. Anyhow, guys, thank you.
I'm gonna
very
check
much.
Our contract.
All right.
I'm gonna look for that fun fact clause in our contract.
Yeah, it was written by the same people that wrote the first right of refusal. So there you go.
There will be a fun fact.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you joining us. Bye.
Bye.